Evening, folks. My name is Scott Lee. I'm an alcoholic. I got a bad case of it, and I really appreciate the opportunity to treat it here tonight. Thank you, Jack, very much. Thank you, Hal. My goodness, I'm an alcoholic. I've been here before. I got invited back. That's a big deal for an alcoholic. You know, a lot of us don't have a history of getting invited back anywhere. And so this is kind of a big deal for me. I appreciate it. I like to open anything I do with a quote from Lois Wilson, who said that in the moment of silence that she invited God to the meeting. And just in case you don't have a God, I'd like to recommend you borrow mine. I recommend him very highly. He's got a great sense of humor. You can address him as a God of Scott's limited understanding, because that's the truth. And then I'll just meet you back here. So let's take a moment each our own way. Literally invite God to the meeting. Amen. Thank you. Thank you. That takes all the heat off of me. I used to be bad to drink. I didn't start till I was 18 years old. I'd had a sip of my daddy's beer, but I was going through fraternity rush in college as a freshman, and the fraternity boys walked into a bar, and I followed them into the bar, and they ordered a beer, ordered the same brand of beer they did. Imagine that. I'm such a chameleon. I can do what you're doing so fast. It looks like we did it together. By the way, who here is sober less than a year? Can I see your show of hands? Less than a year. Wow! Wow, wow, wow. Why? I came to talk to you. Boy, the rest of these turkeys are on their own. But I came to talk to you guys. I think it's just fantastic. I'm so glad you're here. Anyway, so we start sipping this beer. I don't like the beer. I don't like the taste. I don't like the way the foam feels going down my throat. Makes me feel full. I don't like that either. But I'm hypervigilant. I'm watching what they're doing. And I'm drinking the beer at the same pace they are. As we approach the bottom of this beer, I'm thinking, let's pay these nice people and get out of here. They ordered another. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, by the way. My home group's the Backroom Group in Nashville. And we meet Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 and 10:30. If you're in town, come see us. Don't all come at once, but if you're visiting, we'd love to see you. So anyway, by the time that second beer hit bottom, so they ordered another beer, and I didn't come here to talk to you. I came to talk with you. So help me a little bit. So when they ordered another beer, does anybody have a wild guess what I did?
Beer.
Nice. Yeah, you bet. By the time the second beer hit bottom, I got the magic that all the alcoholics in the room understand, right? And the earthlings don't understand, because it doesn't do that for them. They waste every drop they drink, I guess. And I just got taller. Who got taller when they drank? Come on, taller. Put them up taller. How about better looking? Put them back up. Yeah. Pimples jumped right off, right? God, I was handsome. Yeah, fantastic dancer. Dancers, yeah. Gentlemen, now I can talk to the girls, right? Yes, ladies, you can stand and listen to that garbage. Right? Right? I mean, this is the magic juice that works for everybody. I've been looking for this all my life. Yeah. Wow. And I got all of that for two beers. Yeah. Hadn't even got to the big one. The big one was, for the first time in my life, something deep inside me went, whew. It was just okay to be Scott. Never had been. I became convinced as a small boy that I was not good enough. Nothing I ever did could ever measure up. And I became an actor as a small boy. My act is I'm going to pretend to be the guy I think you want me to be. And use whoever's in front of me right now. I'm a different guy to everybody. And please God, the end of my drinking. I got a customer in Morristown, Tennessee. He's a very religious guy. He knows a very religious Scott. Got a customer in Knoxville. It's a Friday night party kind of guy. He knows a Friday night party kind of Scott. Boys in the pool room where I buy my dope and drink my beer. They know that Scott. Neighbors, business partners, family members. Everybody knows a different Scott. The greatest fear in my life, people from different parts of my life be at the same place, same time. How am I going to act? How am I doing? Am I hitting anybody? Yeah. That's how most of us get here. Yeah. Convinced to the depths of my soul that I'm not good enough. And if you could see me like I see me, you'll feel about me like I feel about me, and I think I'm garbage. And if I'm awake, I'm on red alert, trying to hold up the right mask to keep you from seeing the real me. That's my mission in life. because clearly a bunch of together people like you would not have a defective guy like me around if you knew. And my mission is to keep you from finding out who I am. And it takes a phenomenal amount of energy to do that. I don't know how much longer I could have done it. And I zipped through a 4-year college and 5 years and 2 summer schools. Any other extended educators? Yeah, a couple more, yeah. And joined the United States Air Force. They sent me to Valdosta, Air Force pilot training. In the second 6 months of that training, we flew the T-38, which you're all familiar with. You may not know that you are. You saw the movie Top Gun. I have news for Tom Cruise. That black airplane they had the dogfights with was not a MiG. Do I sound confident? I've got over 100 missions in that plane. And I'm pretty sure it's not a MiG. It's Air Force F-5 T-38. It's a high-performance airplane. Let me tell you what that means. That means after-burning jet engines faster than the speed of sound. I take the runway in that airplane, lock the canopy, lock the brakes, run up to what they call military power. It's everything short of afterburner. And release the brakes and roll a couple hundred yards and light the burners. A mile later at 155 knots, which is around 170 miles an hour, you think back on the stick. You don't move it. You never move the stick in this plane. It's too sensitive. When you get in the plane, you adjust your rudder pedals and seat height so that your right forearm is resting on your right thigh. You got the throttles in your left hand, control stick in your right. If your right arm is up in the air, you're all over the sky. You can't fly the plane. It's that sensitive. So at 155 knots, I rotate. At about 165, she flies off. I raise the gear. At 1,000 feet, I raise the flaps and begin to apply forward pressure on the stick. I'm going to hold her level, and she wants to climb bad. I hold her level at 1,000 feet. We get to 600 knots and pull up. And I'm level at 40,000 feet, 3.5 minutes after releasing brakes. This airplane has a roll rate of 720 degrees a second. Yep, that's twice every second. Your eyeballs won't track that if you're sober. Trust me, I tried it both ways. And I'm sure. And a loop is defined as a 360-degree turn through the vertical plane pulling positive Gs. And this plane entered at 10,000 feet. I entered the loop at 10,000 feet at 500 knots. It's 550 miles an hour. Pull up at 5 Gs. Let me tell you what that means. You're pulling 1 G right now. At 1G, a 200-pound man weighs 200 pounds. At 5Gs, a 200-pound man weighs 1,000 pounds. That is precisely what that means. Everything on you now weighs times 5. That includes your upper eyelids. You will notice that at 5Gs and above. Believe me, you will. All right, 10,000 feet, 500 knots, 5Gs, wings level inverted at 20,000 feet. Took 2 miles vertically to pull her over on her back. Lose 10,000 feet down the backside, total lapse time less than 25 seconds. I tell you all that for 2 reasons. The first one, of course, is to impress you. You and me, Jonathan. Yeah. And the other one is, and by the way, Disney, they don't have that ride. The other reason is to help you see my alcoholism and maybe yours. 5:30 that afternoon, I head to the Officers Club. Now, let me get real clear here. I used to like to go out at night to get drunk. I'm going out tonight to get drunk. And if you're not going out to get drunk tonight, I don't want you along. You're going to be a problem later. You've been out with people like that, haven't you? They should do something else, I think. But did you ever get accidentally drunk a night when you're absolutely sure you weren't going to drink because tomorrow, whatever? Who got accidentally drunk a night when they're sure they weren't going to? Accidentally drunk. Come on, put them up. Come on, these are my people. Yeah, yeah. So I know for sure this particular night I ain't getting drunk. Because tomorrow morning at 7:30, I'm going to be in that airplane. You've heard of the Air Force Thunderbirds, a demonstration team, but did not fly with them. They flew this airplane for 7 years. And tomorrow morning, a friend of mine and I are going to do their show, and we can't. And as the wheels are coming up, I'm going to slide up under his tail. And his afterburner is going to be, well, I'm way too far away from that. It's going to be, if I stand up in my cockpit, I can almost touch this afterburner. We're going as fast as 700 miles an hour, pulling as many as 7.5 Gs, doing things you can't even have nightmares about. Yeah. Clearly not going to get drunk tonight. How insane would you have to be to get drunk the night before going to fly acrobatics in close formation at 9/10 of the speed of sound? You have to be crazy. So I'm clearly not going to get drunk tonight. Fill in the blanks for me. So I'm going to drop by the club and have one, no more than
two.
That was good. I noticed some of you didn't play. This is what you told somebody on the phone. Remember? We're going to call this Plan A. All right. So everybody can have one no more than?
Two.
I should be home by 6:30, no later than?
Seven.
It's good to have a plan. It's an excellent plan. It's a fabulous plan. However, we called it Plan A for a reason. We didn't call it that then. It was the plan then. Today, we recognize it as Plan A. But somewhere between the first sip of the whatever and the bottom of the second one. Could be draft beer tonight, could be Jack and White, could be the first sip of whatever I'm taking behind the bar tonight. And the bottom of the second one, I think I changed my mind. Plan B. Gonna have a few more. Not what happened. What actually happened was I got this craving Silkworth talks about. But you got a craving being satisfied. You don't even know you have it. Right, we all this moment have this terribly strong craving we're not aware of. Somebody come up behind you with a baggie put over your head, you'll find out in a big hurry you got a craving to breathe air. While it's being satisfied, you don't even know you have it. I don't even know I have it. I think I changed my mind. Yeah, bartender, I know. I said I was going home, but I'm going to watch one more quarter of the ball game. Set them up. I tell you, Will, rack them up. We'll shoot just a couple more games. Two more over here, bartender. Right. Plan B, a few more. Well, what happens is I don't get home by 7 with two in me. I leave the officers' club at exactly 1 o'clock in the morning because they... A lot of pilots here. We'll talk flying later. And drive home drunk with a hand over one eye. Where are the one-eye drivers? Come on, put them up. Hand over one eye. Yeah, I do this a bit. And one guy told me, he said, he had this pair of drunk driving glasses. He'd spray painted one lens black. He just put those babies on. He didn't have to put his hand up. And this other guy said he was afraid a cop would see that. And so he put a piece of duct tape. I've always wondered what a cop would have. Anyway, for those of you who are new, this is your gene pool we're talking about here. This should scare you if it doesn't. And I drive home drunk. I walk in. My first wife rips me a new one. Quite a bit of information in that sentence. Play it back. And I head into the bathroom for my after-drinking chores. The questions are going to get harder. Who puked? At least once. Come on. Who puked? Come on, put them up. Pukers. How about out your nose? Who puked out your nose at least once? Oh, yes, Lord, yes. For those of you who did not have the privilege of puking out your nose, if you do, your sinuses will sting with every breath the next day. And maybe the day after. All right, who quit forever? Nose pukers, put them back up. If you puked out your nose, you quit forever. I know it didn't stick, you and me. Come on. Who swore to yourself never again? Who swore to somebody else never again? Now, I do this in Yankee land. Nothing happens. Around here, I'm going to get about two-thirds. Who swore to somebody else one hand on the Bible never again? Put them up. Yeah, we get a pretty good number on that. Who peed in the closet? Did you really? I never did that. I am so embarrassed for you. I don't believe I'd have told that myself. You might want to talk to your sponsor about the difference between sharing in a meeting and a fifth step. You know, there's some things that are better left unsaid. Now, I will admit my first wife is still angry about that antique coffee table that used to be in the living room. I'll give you that. I tell my story pretty much the same way. And I was in one of the gated communities. That's a jail. about 20 years ago, and telling this, and I just ad-libbed that, who peed in the closet. About 25 guys around. One guy put up his hand. I did that to him. Some of you have been told they don't laugh much in the jail. Well, they did that night. And when the laughter died down, the guy said, hey, man, no big deal. It wasn't my closet. For those of you who are new, don't go home with these funny things I just did and tell your neighbor. Because the earthlings don't know when to laugh. All right? And they're going to say, you what? So, they don't know when to laugh. Where were we? We're quitting forever? Nose pukers. Yeah, quit forever. I thought, the two most important and creative inventions of the 20th century, both invented by alcoholics, by the way. One was that little half moon of carpet to put around the commode for you to kneel on. That was invented by one of our people. His knees were all torn up from the hard bathroom floors. And that soft commode seat you could rest your head in between the heaves there. They're not as cold as the porcelain, but they're real soft. Those were nice, you know. And so I'm in there puking up my guts and quitting forever. And then I would pray the pre-AA prayer. Now, we're going to do it together. Let me reset the scene, okay? We're somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 o'clock in the morning, maybe as late as 3. I'm in there in the bathroom, kneeling on the prayer rug, and we're at the part of the proceedings where there's nothing coming out but noise and an occasional tear. Remember that part? Mike, remember that part? Yeah. And I would pray the pre-AA prayer. We're going to do it together. I'm going to do the first line. You do the second. Are you ready? God, get me out of this. And which is alcoholic for amen, as I'm sure you know. Now, for those of you who are new, if you're not sure, you need to be here. We have a one-question test. Did you know the prayer? The earthlings don't know the prayer. I had teeth and I brushed my teeth and go to bed. It's around 3 in the morning. I get up at 6. Not even hungover yet. Remember that wonderland between drunk and hungover? Alice thought she went into the wonderland. Oh, baby. And here I am in that airplane. It's 7:30 in the morning. I'm wearing jump boots, a flight suit. I have a G suit on. Without the G suit, I will black out today. Helmet, visor, oxygen mask, parachute. There's a 20-millimeter cannon shell under my seat. It's ejection seat. This is not a toy airplane. And we let those afterburners. Boom! And here we go. And I slide up on the leader's tail, and we're pulling 7 Gs, doing 700 miles an hour. And I'm dying. Oh, my God. Oh. I call it the Force 5 hangover. It's the one where the butcher knife went in right here. I got the headache in the exact same place every time. The eyelids are made out of sandpaper. Throat and nasal passages are raw from puking all that acid. I got a tremor in my hands. I've selected 100% of the oxygen lever. It will not cure a hangover. Trust me. I've tried it hundreds of times. It will not. And I'm also tied on the leader flying the mission. What I just described for you, in case you missed it, was willpower. Many of us have tremendous willpower. There's no defense against this disease of ours. The only thing that keeps me going is absolute certain knowledge that I'll never feel this way in a plane again. Because you see, last night, I quit forever. And it meant with all my heart, didn't you? Didn't you mean it every time you quit forever? Didn't you mean it? Yeah. And I was powerless over alcohol, and I was ignorant of the fact that I was powerless. Tough combination, powerlessness and ignorance. Tough combination. Some guy can hit a golf ball 300 yards. I can drive an airplane. I was one of the gifted ones. I did not earn it. I finished second in my class. My next duty station, I flew a four-engine jet all over the world, literally. I have flown around the world twice in the same month. Some people are saying it's flat. It's round. I checked twice. I was then sent to Southeast Asia. I flew the original side-firing gunship, Puff the Magic Dragon. I was transferred into an intelligence mission. We were flying over Laos. President was on TV a couple times a week saying we were not in Laos. I'm flying a mission so classified you're not supposed to pray about it because God doesn't have a high enough security clearance. It's one of those things. And I'm not proud about what I'm about to tell you, but I was so drunk at 4 o'clock one morning taxiing my plane out, taxiing off into the weeds off the end of the taxiway instead of making the turn onto the runway. If it had been 4 in the afternoon, if there had been a plane taxiing behind mine, if there's a rock, a ditch, a stump out there, somebody else would be with you fine folk, and I'd still be in a military prison. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm just simply tell you that's what alcoholism does to nice people like us. It has us disrespect the things we care the most about and tear the hearts out of the people that love us the most. That's what it does. And I'm just uncaught. People ask me, how in the world how could you fly drunk? I say, well, it's a big sky. There's not much up there. If you stay away from the edges, I completed my mission at my last duty station. I was an instructor pilot on a four-engine jet with a worldwide mission. I was 26 years old. You think I didn't have a gift? Most people don't get to live their dream. I got to throw mine away. I resigned my commission. I'm honorably discharged. I got a job as a sales rep in the summer of 1984. My boss said to me one day, "You're going to treatment right now, or you're fired." The man was a great communicator. I mean, he could explain things. It was a gift. June 28, 1984, I signed into a little charm school not too far from here called Ridgeview. And to overcorrect for a problem I didn't have. That's how I got here. And so I don't care why you're here. Welcome. And I didn't sleep. I'm what they call tri-addicted. We used to hear that all the time. Tri-addicted? I'm addicted to everything I tried. And right? Yeah. Yeah, you got it bad. And I've been watching you, too. And let me just tell you, I could afford it, too. I was making a lot of money in those days. And I didn't sleep the first three nights I was in treatment, laying there the fourth night knowing I ain't going to sleep again. And some of you may recall, if you're not drinking and you're not sleeping, stay dark for quite a while at night. It actually goes on all night long. And I don't remember exactly. Lights out at 11. I got to stay in that bed till 6 in the morning. Short bathroom breaks. That's it. I'm stuck. I got to lay there. And what I'm about to describe to you happened to me. I didn't do it. I'm laying there, and I see my life as you might see a series of short movies. The important events. I've always given myself credit for my intentions. I'm probably the best intended person you're ever going to meet. I do close-up magic. And one of these days, I was going to get a clown suit. And when I'm on the road, instead of running the bars and chasing the women, put on the clown suit and go and take my magic kid into a children's hospital. Do it. You got to admit to take it. And I haven't done it yet, by the way. But, you know, one of these days, our third step talks about a decision. For me, the difference between an intention and a decision. An intention is followed by more intentions. A decision is followed by action. That's the difference. And this night, when I'm seeing my life, the intentions are not present. And I began to think about the single worst thing I've ever done. I got one, stands all alone. And I'd always been able to stop it before. My good Tennessee friend, Jack Daniels, knows how to stop that. My south of the border friend, Jose Cuervo, he knows how to help me with that. Not laying in a bed in a treatment center, they don't. And I can't get this thing to stop. And I got this horrible thing I've done all over me, and I can't get anything in. And I reached what I was going to call bottom for the next 30 years. One of the guys I sponsored changed the definition for me not too long ago. I got to the place where I'd have paid any price and done anything not to feel the way I felt, not to have that guilt on me. I don't know how to explain it. And from in here, it happened in my chest. Vocal cords didn't move, did not come out of my mouth, I didn't think it. From in here, screamed. It was internal, but it was loud. God, forgive me. What I'm going to tell you now happened in the next moment. You've had x-rays taken to your teeth, and the dentist picks up that lead apron. It felt like something like that was laying all over me. I was unaware of it. It flew off of me, and I thought I was going to float off the bed. That's what it felt like. Didn't scare me. At the same moment, this magnificent white light came on, shining just on me and on my bed. The light had a texture and a warmth, and I could feel it in every cell of my body, and I was aware of every cell of my body. And it felt so good it almost hurt, and I cannot explain that to you. There was a partition about a foot behind my head. The light came within about a foot of the ceiling, and the light was coming over, but it was all focused just on me. I've never seen light do that. And I knew God was right there. And and with my eyes closed, I could see that room in better detail. I can see this one now. And I used to say God forgave me then, but I don't speak for God. And I don't like to be around people that do. I know I received His forgiveness then. I don't know if He ever judged me. I cannot answer. But I lay in the presence of infinite love. And there just aren't words. I basked in infinite love. I floated in it. It surrounded me. And I think I've thought about this a lot. I've had the privilege of telling this story quite a bit. I think the partition was there because as sick as I was, I could only stand so much love. And I believe that's right. I believe that's right. And that doesn't make any sense to me either. But I think that's the situation. And I do not know how long I lay in His presence, What we call time does not exist in that presence. 0.2 seconds and 3 months are the same number there. I'm not aware of anything else that passed between us. I can't say it did not. I simply do not know. I do know that after some period of time, whatever it was, I slept. I know that because I awakened the next morning. And I hadn't done that in several days. And I woke up the next morning wanting to be one of his guys. And that was my first cornerstone. And for those of you who feel like you've been robbed because you didn't get one of those, this is page 12 in Bill's story. But soon the sense of his presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly those of him myself. I don't speak for Bill either. I'll tell you this, I don't believe that event alone would have got me the 39-year chip that's in my pocket tonight. Every year I tell this story to several thousand of us, and every year 15 or 20 people come up to me at one time and say, I had one of those experiences and I drank again after it. It was only a cornerstone. And if you didn't get one of those, it's probably because you weren't sick enough to need one. And I mean that. I think that's the situation. I don't know, but that's what I think. Anyway, I woke up the next morning wanting to be one of his guys. And I zipped through a 28-day treatment program in 6 weeks flat. You're doing math already, huh? Yeah. And they said this wouldn't work for somebody as sick as you are. Look at this. Yeah. I went back to Nashville, my hometown, where the only person I knew in the city was in recovery was one of my customers, and I didn't want him to know. If you don't recognize that, that's newcomer thinking, terminal case. I'm going to die from what's going on in here really soon if I don't get some help with it. And I set out to follow the aftercare plan. 90 meetings in 90 days. Went to 87. Two of them I just can't remember. One night I'm about to leave for the meeting and my son fell and injured himself. And I put him in the car and went to the emergency room. And we all know that's the right thing. And I thought if you missed, you just missed. Because I can't figure out all by myself that you could go to two meetings in a day. Because I have this minor case of terminal newcomer thinking. It's going to kill me really soon. And stay with me, old Playmates and Playgrounds. My favorite bar in Nashville is on 8th Avenue. And I had a 2-year chip in my pocket the next time my car was on 8th Avenue. I refused to turn onto the street for over 2 years. I'm not kidding you. I'm going to give you the two best-kept secrets in AA. This is being recorded, too, and I'm going to do it anyway. All right. Here's the first one. The directions on how to do a four-step have been very cleverly concealed in the pages of the big book. That was news at the Laughing Academy I went to. But I completed their alleged four-step. And I called back down to the treatment center. And when I had my big white light experience, I realized I see this confession coming at step 5. I had to tell somebody the whole truth, who to tell. There's a counselor there named Bernie. And I can look at Bernie and tell he's ripped out of his gourd. You know what it looks like. He's got this dumb grin. His face is real relaxed. When he walks, he's kind of shuffled. You know what it looks like, right? I said, I'm going to do my fifth step with this junkie. Right? 6 weeks from now, he won't even know if we did it, much less what I said. He's a perfect choice. He agreed to it. So I completed their alleged four-step and called, and he said, sure, and I drove down, did my fifth step with Bernie, and I began to get relief. If I'd been doing the actual steps, I'd be the ones out of this book. With an actual sponsor, the one who's already done them out of this book, I would have gotten relief before then. As an aside, Bernie was not actually stoned. He was sober for 20 years. That was serenity. I didn't know what it looked like. I have this minor case of terminal newcomer thing. It's going to kill me really soon. And I was so insane. I was looking for a sponsor I could relate to. That may be the single dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. Holy mackerel, I'm a newcomer. I don't know my fuzzy tail from straight up. I can't figure out if you go to two meetings a day. Who can I relate to? I can relate to some other squirrel that has no hope. Thank God I didn't find a sponsor I could relate to. We'd both be dead by now. No. If there's anything I will never need, it's a sponsor I can relate to. What I needed was a sponsor whose suggestions I would follow. Why would I do that? I want to look like he looks. I want to sound like he sounds. I want my life to work like it looks like his life is working. And there's a guy named Jerry. Jerry, would you sponsor me? Well, we'll see. Here's your first assignment. Assignment? I thought a sponsor like a new best friend. Going to introduce me around, show me some of the better meetings, maybe loan me some money, fix my wife. We don't have time to tell you the things I was wrong about. Here's your first assignment. Don't have time to tell it tonight. It took me a week. I came back and said, Jerry, I did the assignment, sponsor me. He said, I'll sponsor you my way. I said, what does that mean exactly? He said, "You are too sick to stay sober on the fellowship of AA. You will need the program also." And I didn't have any idea what he was talking about. And he gave me the number one best kept secret in all of AA. And how do we keep it secret? Well, we read it at most of the meetings. It's on page 59, right before step one, where it says, "Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a..." No steps, no program. Just that simple. Just that simple. The steps are not part of the program. They are the program. Definition of insanity: thinking you're in a 12-step program and not actually taking all 12. Yeah. And he said, "You will work the 12 steps the way I laid them out at the pace I set, or I will drop you like a bad habit, because I don't work with losers." Now, he was only rough with me till I finally surrendered to him. He had a tremendous ego to cut through. He was a beautiful man. I wish I'd thanked him one more time. I actually am doing that right now. And he said, "You're going to have to do this stuff. And I don't like how this is going." And so I hit him with my Sunday punch. I said, "Why?" Yeah, here's some of the old-timers laughing. Yeah, why? He said, "I don't answer why questions on men I sponsor. The reason is the first step says you're not in management, and why is a management question? So all the why questions have the same answer. The answer is you don't need to know." And I hated that when he said it. Today I embrace it. It's one of my cornerstones. It isn't not knowing that makes me crazy. It's needing to know that makes me crazy. When I can lay down the need to know, I can get peaceful. From a position of peace, I can begin to know. But I didn't know that. He said, "I'm feeling kind of generous this morning, Sparky. I'm going to give you a free one. The reason you have to do the 12 steps is because alcohol is not your problem." What? It's not your problem, it's your answer. Makes you taller, smarter, better looking. If it does all that for you, or it couldn't have done anything to you. So if you're going to lay that answer down, you're going to have to pick up a new answer that's better than the old answer. I'm saying why every time he takes a breath. And he says, "Our program is kind of like going to the dentist. We got to drill before we can fill. First 9 steps are about digging that poison out of your soul. Like the dentist, we got Novocaine. Here we call it sponsorship, fellowship, home group, love. It's not near as hard as the way you've been living." I'm saying why every time. This is where he got me. He said, "Think of yourself as a garbage can." I got that, Jerry. What we're going to do with these steps is we're going to dump you out. We're going to scrub this can nice and clean and stand it back up. We're going through your life and most of it's garbage. We're going to toss it. Portions are good. For example, "Do you love your children?" I said, "Very much." He said, "Good, we'll keep that. We finish these steps, you're going to be a big, empty, clean can of just a little good stuff in the bottom. The reason, well, these days something heavy is going to slam into your heart." He said, "Your father's going to die. And on that day, you had a little good stuff in the bottom. But on that day, if you don't have that big, empty, clean space to store that pain in, while we love you back to spiritual health, you will escape. And the only escapes you know are killing you and tearing the hearts out of the people that love you." And I ran out of why. And I allowed the man to coach me through the 12 steps. And I got what I think is the most powerful promise in the book. It's on page 60. It's the first line. It says 12. Having had a spiritual awakening, it's the results of these steps. It doesn't say A. A is one of several and one of many. The is singular. The promise to me, one thing is the result of these steps. Spiritual awakening. But in my experience, spiritually awakened alcoholics do not drink beverage alcohol, and they don't ever get thirsty. If you're new, our mission here is not to change you so you never drink again. That's a side effect. The mission is to change you so you never want to again. And I wouldn't have believed that was possible. I've been living it for a long time. I think Jerry started sponsoring me at some time in November of 84. I'm just not sure how I got that far. And the last time I wanted one was sometime in December of 84. And life has happened since then. I have made way too much money. I've been up against bankruptcy. I've had 2 divorces, one I wanted and one I didn't. My precious daughter fired a pistol into her mouth, and I found her in a pool of blood in her bed. She's fine. She's sitting right here, by the way, and she's just fine. We went, yeah. Yeah. And we went through that. I moved into Vanderbilt Hospital. They told us for the first 4 days she will not live. Successful suicide here. She's just not gone yet. She's a nightmare to look at. She's got a breathing tube. And she can't talk, but she can squeeze your hand once for yes and twice for no. She didn't want to die anymore. I'll tell you something. 4 days is a long time. I believe if I not have a spiritual awakening as the result of those steps, the man who came to you in the summer of 84 was probably capable of first-degree murder. It didn't have to happen. sometime over those first few days, I went home and packed a bag, and I moved into Vanderbilt Hospital. There was not a time in the next 60 days. I never left that campus in 60 days. There was not a time in the next 60 days. I want to remember my home group close as I am to Jack right here. 24 hours a day. You can pretend to care. You cannot pretend to show up. You guys showed up. Somebody must put together a schedule. What not to keep me from drinking? They didn't even talk about it. So that one of my people would be there to hold me. If I needed to cry at 3 in the morning, one of my people would be there. I had been taught to cry. I could not cry when it came to you. And if you need to learn to cry, see me. I can help you. I've got a handout on that. Yeah. Anyway, we got through that. I mean, what else has happened to me? I was diagnosed with cancer in my throat in June of 20. They took my teeth because they did so much radiation to my jaw that it's now, my jawbone is still here, but it's dead. And they had to take my teeth out before they did that. And I had to wait for that to heal. I did radiation and chemo. They did so much radiation to my throat, it's all scar tissue. And I can't swallow thicker than applesauce. I'm on a liquid diet for the rest of my life. Well, I can't tell a liquid diet. It was just a different liquid. It shouldn't be a big deal for anybody in this room. And it was just a different liquid. But don't feel sorry for me. Because I can either look at, I'm on a liquid diet for the rest of my life, or I get to live the rest of my life. I've made my choice. Don't feel sorry for me. I don't. Now, I'm not interested in watching you eat. I dream about food a couple of nights a week. I had a big dream last night about food. I dream about it all the time. I haven't eaten since October of 20, and that's just my life. But I'm real comfortable with it because I became okay with me. Somewhere in that step work, we dug the poison out of my soul, and we dug out enough that we got that piece that said, I'm not good enough. If you'll think about it, it's really silly to think one of us is not good enough. We're God's kids, created by this loving, laughing God who created the stars, smallmouth bass, vanilla ice cream, and sex. Good job. That guy was not having a bad day when he created any of us. How silly is that? Of course not. We were just wrong about that. And what happened was, through the step process, we dug so much of the pain and old poison out of my soul that I became comfortable with me. And once I got comfortable with me, I started getting real comfortable with you. Changed me. Changed me. For those of you who are new, I wish I could go through the steps the first time again to get the massive growth. And the steps I was the most afraid of are the ones that did me the most good, and I was wrong. I look at steps 4, 5, and 9, and they look to me like they're designed to punish me. They're going to grind me into the pavement. It's going to be the penalty. I was wrong about that, and you are too. Those are the growth steps. Those are the ones that will change your life if you'll let them. Yeah. And they changed me. I was sober 6 years, and my first wife was screaming at me one more time. And I got this moment of clarity. And what I realized was that I'm 6 feet and 2'10", and she's about 5'5", and maybe 100. And I'm just before punching her in the face. And when she goes down, I'm going with her. She's on the way to the hospital. I'm on the way to the jail. It's a bad plan. I worked it out all by myself. It's a good thing there wasn't anybody else there. And I didn't about face while she was still screaming. And she used to control me with my guilt, and I was guilty. I went through those steps and got my innocence back. She couldn't control me. It was very difficult for her. And drove away, started looking for apartments, and 48 hours later, I moved. It was imminent. I was going to hit her. She wasn't going to quit that, and I was going to hit her. And I didn't know what to do. I went to old time. I said, what should I do? And they said, turn it over. I said, how? Nobody can answer. Believe what you like. I believe what I'm about to tell you. I went to the source. This is what I did not hear the voice. But what I got was this idea. You ever meditate? Try to get your mind to a place where there's nothing? I just succeeded right here in front of you. I have. Where in the world are we in this story? Oh, yeah. And, so what I got was, what is it I turn over? I turn over the result. How do I do that? I do two things. One is, I stand today where God is. and two is operate within his principles and get out of the motive business. Page 60 in the big book tells me I can't trust my motives. This thing we do is about principle, not about motive. That's why step 12 does not say and had good motives in all our affairs. I can't trust my motives. I can hide a bad one under a good one and fool myself. But the other thing I got was three prayers, and I'm going to share them with you. Here they are. Prayer number one, God, if it's your will for us to be together, put us together. Number two, if it's your will for us to be apart, put us apart. Those are the easy ones. Here's the big one. God, if it's your will for me not to know today, please leave me not knowing. That's the big one. That's the big one. When I can pray that one and mean it, I can have my sponsor's definition of serenity. Serenity, he said, is not freedom from the storm. Serenity is peace, in the middle of the storm. The only way to have that is to give up my need to manage the storm. The only way to do that is to know the manager of all storms. That's what this thing is about. I was able to pray that prayer and mean it and be at peace in the middle of the storm for about 10 months. And then one morning I knew. And my life changed. I've got so many fascinating things have happened to me. I was sober less than a year, and Jerry said to me, you're finished in public information forever. You're a promoter, and we don't do that. You will now take a meeting into the jail. I said, Jerry, I've never even been arrested. He said, I have a news flash for you, Sparky. The boys in the jail already know how to get arrested. They're not going to need your help with that. Rarely we've seen a person in jail who has thoroughly followed our path. So I started taking meetings in the correctional facilities, and COVID put us out of there, but I've been doing that for 30 years, and it's magic. It's magic. And it doesn't have anything to do with the door slams and I get to go home. That's not in the equation. What's in the equation is when I go out of my way to try to be a tool in the master's hand, it changes me. It changes me. And I become convinced that God's will is the best deal there is. The best deal there is. I don't want what I want anymore. I want what God wants me to have. I don't know what it is. I know how to get it. One day at a time is the single most difficult assignment I've ever been given. My mind wants to go off into the past, reliving victories, some of which may have actually happened. Or off into the future, trying to figure it all out. Plan A and Plan B, and what if they find out this, and Plan C, and all that. And I'm never between the claps, right here, right now. And yet, right here, right now is where the action is. It's where you magnificent people are. It's where God is. There's one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. That wasn't when I find God, it's where. My God is the God of right here, right now. Fear, for me, depression, fear, anxiety, worry, are all different levels of the same mistake. And that is trading a perfectly good right this moment for a bad event in the future that may not happen. Think about it. That's a terrible trade. So how do I not do that? Because I got a history of that. How do I do that? The answer is I have three vocabularies: speaking, praying, and thinking. I have to use the word today frequently in all three of those. And I believe all of the good questions contain the word today, and all the good answers contain the word today. And the question isn't, what am I going to do about my relationship? Wrong question. What am I going to do about my relationship today? What do I do about my finances? What do you do about them today? You feel the difference in those questions? I got to quit trying to fix the rest of my life. I'd like to read you the first paragraph in the big book chapter, figuring it all out. But we don't have that chapter. So I'm not going to be able to do that. And what that tells me is it's not my job to figure it all out. If my sponsor calls, I was wearing a coat and tie when I got here, but I'm about medium rare. I might have to get out of that. It's one of the things y'all have allowed me to do is be real. Yeah, I've been an actor all my life. And today I get to be the real me. It's a phenomenal experience. It's absolutely amazing. I've discovered also I have yet to hear a spiritual question begin with the word why. I don't believe I've ever heard one. And a couple of years ago, I discovered the source of all of my own anger. I can tell you where it all comes from. It comes from being sure I'm right. I've never been angry when I'm absolutely certain I was right. And being right comes from having passed judgment. I have to judge to be right, to be angry. If I don't judge, I don't get right. If I don't get right, I don't get angry. So judgment is a grandmother of anger. And I realize that, and I believe God wants me to not judge. Added to my morning prayer that day, bless me, please. But I don't judge any situations as good or bad, or any people as good or bad. That I see them as you see them and love them as you love them, especially the ones I find unlovable. I tell you, I have times when I'm unlovable. That's when I need you to love me the most. I don't need you to judge me, then I'm probably doing that myself. That's when I need you. So it must be when you're unlovable, that's when you need me to judge you the most. Loving the unlovable, that's part of the assignment. Serving the God of love is not a part-time job. And I'm either going to serve the God of my addiction or I'm going to serve the God of love. It's going to be one or the other. I can't find a third option. It takes a tremendous commitment. Boy, it's been a good deal, though. Problem I had when I got here is I was afraid of God's will. Let me give it to you another way. God's will! And if you're even thinking it, and I haven't just been thinking it, and, boy, I can't deal with it. So I needed a new God concept. I had to find a friendly God. You guys helped me do that. It's kind of funny. Those of you who read the book know they rewrite it all the time. And a couple of months ago, they added about a half a paragraph on page 13, if you brought your book to class. I swear it wasn't here. It says, my friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. New. That implies I had an old relationship with my Creator. And I would have told you 6 months ago that I didn't, but I did. But I did. See if you recognize any of these other prayers. God, please help me pass this test I didn't study for. Please don't let her be pregnant. You again? Please don't let those flashing red and blue lights be for me. When I was flying that four-engine jet, we came out of Christchurch, New Zealand, landed in American Samoa 8 hours later and took on fuel. And with an eight-hour flight plan to Honolulu, halfway across getting to the new fuel, it was contaminated. It had water in it. At our altitude, the temperature is minus 50. They don't call it water at minus 50, by the way. They call it ice. And water isn't a problem in a jet engine. A lot of jet engines, they inject water on takeoff roll for additional power. The water isn't the problem. The problem is the ice clogs the fuel lines. A jet engine's about so big around, do not respond real well to fuel starvation. We come down into warmer air. We haven't had one stuck up there yet, by the way. They'll calm down. They'll calm down. And so we get down into the warmer air. I can run the engines down here, but I don't have gas to make Honolulu at this altitude, and it's already closer to going than it is to go back. And so we add power and come back up. We can't stay because the numbers say we don't make it to Honolulu. There's nothing in between but water. For 4 hours... 4 hours is a long time to think you're going to die today. We were going to put a 300,000-pound jet airplane into the Pacific Ocean about 150 miles an hour and all die. My guess would be a solid half the people in this room or better have had the experience of thinking they're going to die in the next few minutes, the next few moments. We have laid down bikes. We've looked down gun barrels and drug deals gone bad. We've had people pull knives on us. We've faced jealous husbands. We've wrecked cars and trucks. A lot of us have thought we were going to die in the next moment or two. Let me tell you something. 4 hours is a long time to think you're going to die today. And I promise to God, I don't think I believed in it. He'll get me out of this one. I would quit smoking was first. Quit smoking. Quit drinking. Quit visiting ladies I'm not married to. I'm going back to church. The early service. I might even build some churches. Trust me, you don't leave anything in the bag on this one. And 10 fuel tanks all said zero. The engines are still turning. Decide to shoot a forced landing at Hickam. If I can make what pilots call a high station for a forced landing, I can at least crash on dry land so our bodies can be sent home for burial. That's the conversation in that cockpit. Turn final at Hickam at 9,000 feet. If it all quit then, I'd have made dry land. It wouldn't have been pretty, but I'd have made it. Land on the inlet runway and taxi in, and they shut them down. And they dipped our fuel tanks like you dip your crankcase, how much oil you got. We did not have enough fuel left on that airplane to start four engines and taxi from here to this street. We didn't have that much left. I didn't even check into the hotel. Straight to the bar, bags down on both sides of the bar stool, Mai Tai, the tall one, pack of smokes. Right? Tell me you understand that. Right? Absolutely. And this is what I see. In those days when I prayed, I was trying to make him my God. I've been taught here is how to make me his man. You see, I had it backwards. And the difference is this one works. Don Fritz was one of my great teachers. Get some of Don's talks. And he was the guy to take the question nobody could answer, and he answers right now. It's always principle-based, never motive, always principle. And I had the privilege of spending his last Thanksgiving with him, and everybody in the room knew that's what it was. And I was finally able to ask him the question that had been scaring me for a long time. I said, what are guys like Scott going to do when guys like Don are all gone? And this humble, gentle giant cupped his hands like this. He looked at me and he said, I've been bringing you hands full of water. Go to the river. And that was the answer. Metaphorically, he said, he gained access to a wisdom and a power vastly beyond his own that he believes is available to me, and I believe it's available to everybody here. I'll take you flying one more time. My last flight in that high-performance airplane, I released brakes. It was level at 40,000 feet in 3.5 minutes. I was out over the Florida Panhandle, and Jacksonville Center gave me what's called a barrel. It's a 30-mile circle around a point on the ground with an altitude block. If you're going to play at 9/10 of the speed of sound, they have to give you some room. And they gave me from 18,000 feet to 60. What they don't know is that the Air Force tells me twice a week not to exceed 45,000 feet in this airplane. The reason is there are things that can happen in that very, very thin air at high altitude you will not recover from. Allow me to define not recover. That's spin, crash, burn, die, and owe them an airplane. That's not recover. But I was young and immortal, and where did I go? So I come back out of afterburner, because you run the afterburners at high altitude, it gets really quiet when the engines quit, because they're gonna. So I'm at military power. I'm doing 700 miles an hour. Pull the nose up a little bit, roll in about 15 degrees back, and I'm climbing in this 30-mile circle. The answer to the question is 52,300. At 52.3, she was done. And I told you about the stick and how careful you had to be. Now I can do this with the stick and nothing happens. Because she has just barely got enough wind coming over the wings at 700 miles an hour to keep her flying. 52.3. 52,800 would have been 10 miles even. She would not do the other 500 feet. She was done. I hold the altitude record in the T-38. I didn't get around to telling them that. I should probably write that down. And I had done an instrument climb of what pilots call inside. I had not looked out at all. And I rolled out on north, and I looked up for the first time. It's 9 o'clock in the morning on a clear day. The sun's coming up over my right shoulder. The sky above me through a clear canopy is as black as Jack's heart. And and I looked out to the west and saw the curvature of the earth, and I didn't see it a little bit. I saw it. This thing we're riding is a ball. It's blue. It's beautiful. It's floating there in space. Held there by love, I guess. I didn't see anything else. I had a physical sensation like something warm had been poured over me and ran down me like wax down a candle. I see it again. In the poem High Flight, the author says, I put out my hand and touched the face of God. I did that. I looked at eternity. There simply are not words. I sat there for maybe a minute. I mean, the risk factor on that was rather tall. And I brought the throttles back very carefully, came down, shot one approach, and landed. I didn't tell them. I may be the town grunk. I am not the village idiot. I did not tell them. I just broke the law by over a mile vertically. Didn't quite get around to telling them. And I didn't tell that story the whole time I was in the Air Force. And Burke Harlan, the most spiritual man I've ever known, at his 12-year birthday, I had the privilege of speaking. I only had 8. You've got him now. And I told that story for the first time, and I heard myself say, I don't know why I'm telling this. Of course, you do. It's my first spiritual experience. I just don't happen to recognize it for 30 years. I'm not a skyrocket to success here. Let me tell you something. You can't do something like that and not want to do it again. And in 2004, my little business had a pretty good year. I went out to Nashville International Airport, and I chartered a Learjet. Now, they don't let me drive anymore, but I put my wife and 2 kids in the back. A Lear will go to 51,000 feet. Would you like to know how I know that? Would you like to know what you can see from 51,000 feet on a clear day? And I'm planning to see the curvature of the earth again. Aren't you? Aren't you? We serve a big God. I've learned to dream big. I have learned to dream big. It has changed my life. You have changed my life. I'm so grateful for you, for the gifts I received. I simply do not have words. I want to close with the directions to get to that river that Don talked about. The most important thing I've said tonight, I think it's the most important thing that's ever been said in an AA meeting. Here are the steps we took, were suggested as a program of recovery. I love you with all my heart. Thank you.